Today's episode of Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by TrueCar. Now, it was always difficult to get clarity when you were trying to figure out who was the mole. That was always very difficult. However, it is not very difficult, and you'll have a lot of clarity when you're trying to figure out the price of a new car when you're using TrueCar.com or the TrueCar mobile app, because you can go ahead and pick out all of the features that you want and lock them in and see how much other people are paying for that same exact car down to the zip code. TrueCar users have saved an average of over $3,000 off of MSRP without any hassles or headaches or visits from the mall. This is the coalition that you want, because at TrueCar, they have sold over 2 million cars in the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and there's over 10,000 dealers working with you in the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. So go ahead and contact your TrueCar Certified Dealer by visiting TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app and start saving. TrueCar, never overpay. Back in 2001, a reality show premiered, which pitted a bunch of strangers against each other, trying to figure out which of them was a saboteur, somebody working to prevent them from winning a bunch of prizes. The show, 15 years later, is remembered fondly by its fans across 5 seasons, 2 of which went on to become celebrity seasons. We are, of course, discussing The Mole. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast, and this is our special 15-year Moleversary edition. And here with me to talk about it all is the mole historian, Mike Bloom.
I'm gaining so many historian titles over the past week, Rob. I need to expand the room on my business card in order to accommodate all the titles I have.
Yes. And maybe should I call you Michael Mole today?
Yeah, you can call me Mixmaster Mike Mole Hizzle.
Okay, there you go. So we're going to be talking about The Mole, which is a beloved show to so many reality TV fans. And of course, I remember it fondly from when it came on back in January of 2001, right on the heels of really around the time after the first Survivor ended. Reality TV was so hot. This was ABC's answer to Survivor, premieres before even Survivor, the Australian Outback comes on. So this is a huge deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about the history of the show, because, you know, while it sort of have some critical acclaim at the time, it lasted 4 seasons, then disappeared for a few years, came back for 1 season, and has remained indefinitely canceled from then on. It's sort of filled this almost cult status with the reality TV crowd, where there are people really clamoring to bring them all back after all these years. But for right now, I think we're really just going to go back 15 years and focus on this first big season that brought everybody in the U.S. into the mind frame of The Mole.
Okay, so let's just discuss what The Mole was, because I'm sure we're going to have people who are listening to this podcast, maybe even some people who are listening to this podcast who weren't even alive when the first...
Oh, that is frightening.
First season and the first episode of The Mole came on. Of course, maybe there are some people who either don't remember it or weren't watching it then. And of course, this is maybe, Mike, could we say this is the closest that we could say that American TV has ever come to the genius?
I would say that. I remember when I was first getting into the genius, there were a lot of people in the reality TV community that were saying, like, oh, this is like the best game show the best reality show I've seen since The Mole. And there definitely are like similarities in terms of like production quality, definitely not in actual gameplay, but I mean, this is it's very advanced, I will say that. There are a lot of, just having in one factor in a saboteur in the game, a lot of complications arise, which makes it probably a bit headier than your typical Survivor, Big Brother, Amazing Race fare.
OK, Okay. And of course, The Mole was hosted by then barely known ABC News reporter Anderson Cooper.
Still with the silver hair, though.
Yes. But before he was like the bee's knees and hosting New Year's Rockin' Eve with Kathy Griffin, who was
winner of Celebrity Mole 1.
Yes. How every Mole fan spends New Year's Eve, of course, on CNN. Anderson Cooper went on to become such a big deal, really the breakout star from The Mole, when he was an unknown, that he was the host of The Mole back in season 1 and 2.
Yeah, it's weird looking back watching that, too, because he's just so fresh-faced. And, you know, at this point in his career, I think he had done some correspondence with ABC News, but I think he said that specifically after, you know, The Mole 2 filmed before 9/11, but actually aired a few episodes right before 9/11. I think after 9/11, he was like, I want to get back to news. And that's when he moved on to CNN. So this is like a rare glimpse into early life Anderson Cooper. And it's something that, you know, I think a lot of people really want him to get back into the game. But considering the position he has now, I don't think he's ready to jump back into the reality TV pool.
Yeah, there's like a 0.000% chance Anderson Cooper will leave his current post to start hosting future editions of The Mole.
Yeah, which means like Ahmad Rashad and John Kelly are in the corner being like, come on, guys, you can pick us. We're available. But nobody likes either one of them, unfortunately.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about The Mole, what it was, probably a lot about season 1 and, you know, ultimately what went on to become of The Mole. Mike, did you become a fan of The Mole during its initial run, or were you too much of a young lad?
So, I mean, I was a young lad at the time. I was 10 years old, I think. I need to remember my own age at this point. But yeah, I mean, I think after Survivor had aired, I, like a lot of reality TV fans, was ready to just gobble up any sort of thing of the genre that sort of popped up from major networks. And so when this came about in early 2001, I had no idea what it was. And so I decided to check it out initially. I mean, I just thought it was a really fun concept, this whole idea that there was somebody in there that was working with production to try to, you know, sabotage the competition and all the sort of strategy that was involved in trying to figure out who that was. And I love the aspect of the audience playing along at home, trying to figure out who they think the mole might be. So that was something that got me hooked in almost immediately. So I've been kind of following the show ever since throughout its tumultuous 8-year history. What about you? Were you an early adopter?
Sure, sure. I watched all of these early reality shows. Any single one that came on, I watched them all. I believe there was a boot camp show on Fox. Did you watch that one?
Oh yeah, there was that had like a contemptuous ending, didn't it? There was like something involving like a jury or somebody had lost something on the final task. But I remember that as well.
Yes, yes. And I feel like that was also tied up in litigation with Mark Burnett, that basically he was suing and saying that it was basically Survivor. There was also the Temptation Islands of day. So there was a lot going on in the early prehistoric days of reality TV. And The Mole was, of course, a big part of that, probably on the Mount Rushmore of early reality shows.
So if we're saying, you know, this is, you know, prehistoric times, are we comparing The Mole to like a sort of dinosaur, though it's sort of not as big as Amazing Race, Big Brother or Survivor? So it's probably one of the lesser dinosaurs that got extinct very quickly.
Yes, yes, I think so. Now, Mike, to prepare for this show, you actually did a big Mole rewatch. Could you tell us about some of the research you did for this?
Yeah, so I had gotten The Mole season 1 on DVD. Unfortunately, there are only 2 seasons of The Mole on DVD, this and Celebrity Mole 1. And I chose not to investigate the other one. But I really enjoyed taking a look at this again, between, you know, the production qualities of it being 2000 and things are a little looser than they probably are in reality TV nowadays. And just, you know, on a rewatch, it's fun to watch this show again, knowing who the mole is, just to see any sort of subtle moves that they may make throughout the game or how production tries to throw people off. So this is definitely a show that I feel like, in spite of knowing the final outcome, is still fun to rewatch.
Did you feel like there was a lot there on the rewatch in terms of being able to spot? And we will be spoiling The Mole, and we will be spoiling all the editions of The Mole that have aired. So if you are very spoiler sensitive, you can tune out now and then go back and rewatch The Mole as Mike did, and then come back and we can listen to have all the fun that the people who are listening to it now will have.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can definitely see that production was willingly throwing shade at a lot of different contestants at once, because again, the audience is playing at home and they want to leave the audience in as much of the dark as possible. So specifically with this first season, I feel like here's your last chance for spoiler warning, folks. Catherine Price, who ends up being the mole, you know, she played a very under the radar game, and they definitely showed that. She became much more prevalent towards the middle to end of the game, but for the first third of it, she's pretty non-existent on the screen. But that's almost great in terms of, like, if you're writing like a murder mystery and you want to be the person you least suspect at that point in the game, Catherine would probably be my suspect at the bottom of the list.
I feel like that was kind of a flaw in the show for me, where it was always cool at the end of the season to go back and see what everybody screwed up. I feel like almost like the end of the movie Clue, that you could sort of like come up with like a highlight package of why every single person could have been the mole and different things that people screwed up. So I always felt like there weren't really that many things that the mole was messing up for them.
Yeah, so would that mean you would be running around a mansion a la Wadsworth, screaming out things that possibly could have happened if Steven was the mole, for example?
Yes. I think you could have really come up with a not too elaborate fan fiction why any single person in the season could have been the mole.
Yeah, which I was an aspect that I really enjoyed. And unfortunately, one of the downsides of that is that there's sort of more of an even-handed editing process, whereas I feel like maybe in later seasons, they might focus in more on one or two main suspects to kind of keep it more of a two-dog race. But here, I think, again, this is the first time they were doing it as well, so they were sort of, you know, testing things out and seeing what worked and what didn't. They really kept things even-handed, which was something that I enjoyed. It was almost like everybody kind of got their moment in the sun, all 10 contestants, which was definitely enjoyable.
It was also less interesting to see who was going to be the winner than who was ultimately the mole.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing as well. And maybe it's also, again, to spoil things, I mean, of the final three, which were Jim, Catherine, and Steven, Jim was my personal favorite at the time. And so to like see when I saw him lose, because the way they did the final reveal in the first season was that like they brought one person out at a time and said, like, you're either the winner, the loser, or the mole. And so to have, you know, the first thing happen is that Jim loses, I was sort of tuned out for almost the rest of it. At that point, I wasn't even unsure, like, do I really care about who the mole is, because my favorite is gone. Luckily, they remedied that in future seasons where it's like three people behind doors and the winner unlocks their door and the mole unlocks their door. But at the time, it was a little bit of an anticlimactic ending. It might also be because Steven, our eventual winner, was not like the biggest personality. And it turns out like, There are very few times when like the biggest personality is the one that ends up winning the season on the mole.
Steven was the winner?
Steven was the winner. Yeah, the undercover cop was. Exactly.
All this time I thought Jim was the winner.
I had somehow, maybe it was, you know, my subconscious tried to convince me. When I came into this rewatch, I had remembered Jim was the winner as well. But then when I just watched this final episode, I was completely shocked that I had forgotten Jim was the loser. And that's just because, I mean, if we're talking about winner's edit here, Jim had all these really strategic confessionals throughout the game about, you know, just like how you have to play the game and trust issues and all that stuff. He almost had like the first theme defining confessional of every episode, whereas Steven was sort of playing a more underhanded game that they eventually revealed. But just looking at editing itself, I was like, well, Jim's got to win this thing, right? So when Steven did, I was a little disappointed, to say the least.
Yeah, Jim was a lot more memorable than Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I probably remember Steven most for his job. I had forgotten in watching the season how much of an apparent flirt he was, which got an entire package at the sort of reunion they did in the final episode about how he just like flirted with all the girls and played with Catherine's hair and gave everyone massages. And he apparently was playing a really, really great game. I guess it was just super. It was like a Danny Boatwright-esque game, and that the cameras didn't really catch.
Very Boatwright-esque.
Yes.
All right, Mike, could you take us through what an average episode of The Mole consisted of?
Sure. So The Mole in general is a group of people, 10 strangers in this case, of the first season, that were brought together. In every episode, they participate in 2 to 4 tests, as I talked about in the first season. I think it's called games after that. And these tests can involve anywhere from, you know, brain scratching puzzles to really simple tasks to embarrassing tasks to fearful tasks. But if they accomplish these tests, they earn a sum of money that goes into a group pot. And this pot is eventually going to be won by the winner at the very end of the game. But they compete in these tests. Some of these tests might produce what are called exemptions, because what happens is at the end of every episode, all the players that are left in the game take a quiz about the mole. And these questions can range from, you know, in this test, did the mole do this? To, you know, does the mole wear a watch? to, you know, what's gender is the mole? And the final question is always, who is the mole? And so these players take this quiz, and the player that scores the lowest on each quiz is eliminated at the end of each round. And where these exemptions come into play is that if you earn an exemption, you do not need to take the test. So you're basically immune for that round. However, some of these exemptions involve things like betraying your team or having people commit penalties to take money out of the pot. So there's always sort of a risk reward going on there.
And then when you took the test, it could have been that you just didn't know who the mole was and you were kind of an idiot. Or it also could have been that you were like really good at remembering things, but you just had the wrong person in terms of like you had just like a bad read on the whole thing. And then you end up just getting voted out or losing because you were so convinced it was somebody, as opposed to the person who sort of just like hedges and like, I don't really know anything.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think like the first few rounds of the game are a little bit of a fracas in that you're probably your best bet is to sort of spread your answers evenly amongst people or like answer with the majority of the group. So let's say for one task, it divides off like 9 people and 3 people. You're probably going to want to answer what the majority of the people would lie just to kind of stick with the odds. Whereas when you get to like the middle and the end of the game, when you start really honing in on one or two people as the mole, then, as you said, you're going to lose big if you end up picking the wrong person, which has happened several times throughout the course of the series.
In my watching of the first episode, I went back and tried to watch some of this before we talked about it. Basically, like every scene in the mole is almost like a confessional of a player just like throwing shade at another player about why they're the mole.
Yeah, exactly. So after every task, and they actually do this at the end of every episode while they're taking the quiz, there's sort of a montage where people will spout out various reasons why, you know, very shady things that a person had done earlier in the episode to kind of cast suspicion on a lot of different players. And that's not only on their behalf, but on the audience's behalf as well, so that they sort of have their own main list of suspects going into their own metaphorical execution.
Mike, the origin of the mole. Now, this did not come from America. This was an import, correct?
From Belgium.
Like so much of our reality TV.
And our waffles.
You know, these reality TV shows in Europe, between Survivor, Big Brother, The Mole, Utopia.
One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. You know, you go to Europe, we got to go like be pitching shows in Europe before we bring them here.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that's the way to really bring success in the U.S. I mean, I don't know how many reality shows have become dormant in the past several years, but maybe that's what ABC needs to do, is just bring all the reality TV programming overseas. Maybe Whodunit would have worked better in Europe.
But even like American Idol, America's Got Talent, like these are also British imports.
Yeah, that's very true.
It's the 60s rock scene on reality TV.
Exactly. So the mole was the Beatles in that form? Actually, no, they're the Monkees. They're the less popular choice.
They're the Mole Stones.
Yeah, so we just compared the mole to the Rolling Stones and a dinosaur in the past like 20 minutes. We're doing really well for the longevity of the show and the chances of it being profitable.
Then the mole then came on in the U.S. Do we have any sense of how the mole did ratings wise? Was it a cult hit? I know it was not nearly what Survivor was.
Yeah, I think from what I could tell, I think there were decent ratings for the first couple of seasons. I know people have said in other places that like the Mole 2 had like the worst ratings ever, but it was also their first few episodes were aired right before 9/11. And they actually like stopped airing the episodes and waited almost an entire year before re-airing the season. Because, I mean, again, for people that were born after 2001, it had a pretty big effect on the media. So I think it produced pretty decent ratings during the first two civilian seasons. The celebrity seasons, it had sort of an inverse effect where the ratings began to drop off a little bit. And then it was outright canceled after the Yucatan season. And then I think when the writer's strike happened in 2007, 2008, they're like, I guess we got to bring back something. And so the mole came back, but apparently the ratings were not great for that either, so much so that ABC decided to not continue with it.
Yeah, this is great. I've got the 2000-2001 TV season overall ratings. These are the top 157 shows on network TV during the 2000-2001 season. And The Mole clocked in as the number 42 show that season. It had an 8 rating. And also then in terms of the share, it was a 12.3 share, which is huge. Like, if the Mole was on today doing those numbers, it would be maybe the biggest show on television.
Yeah, absolutely. Which there. I think speaks definitely to the sort of inundation that reality TV has had, whereas it was definitely a much bigger thing back then to have a reality show pop up. But yeah, but I guess maybe the interest is sort of waned over time over those 4 years. And again, it had that little spurt of growth in 2008 that the fans were happy about, but it seemed like they didn't translate to fantastic ratings, at least fantastic by ABC standards. Though, I mean, if the Clark curse is any indication, I feel like ABC is a little finicky about their reality shows. They want to find a breakout hit, apparently, not just a modest success.
So then the following year, in the 2001-2002 season, then the Mall plummets down to the 108th show, does a 3.73 rating.
It also moved to Friday night after 9/11 as well, which, you know, they coined that the death slot term, though I don't want to curse Amazing Race with that. And then they wisely realized that when they decided to go forward with Celebrity Mole, I think they moved it back to Tuesday night. So it was a short-lived time on Fridays. I guess it was part of TGIF then, if that's that was still existing at the time, I think.
I'm not sure. Ironically, also on this list, I'm looking at the worst show of the year at 153, the lowest rated show of the 2001-2002 season. I guess there must have been re-airings of The Amazing Race on UPN. That was the lowest rated show of the year. Right there next to the Mole at 106, Temptation Island. So that was sort of like the death knell for Temptation Island also on Fox.
Yeah, and I mean, you also look at like even like Survivor Africa too. It didn't take as much of a hit as the Mole 2 did, but I feel like even around like 2001-2002, even though we had American Idol come into prevalence, mm-hmm. like some people were starting to get like a little tired of reality yeah. TV overall.
Survivor is down to number 6 in the 2001-2002 TV season, down from number 1 the previous year.
Hashtag first world problems for Survivor. They went from number 1 to number 6.
Yeah. All right. So Mole fans don't care about the ratings. They want to hear us talk about the Mole. So, Mike, you've watched season 1. What are some of the fun things, like for people who've never watched the Mole? Give me an example of a Mole challenge.
Sure. So the fun thing that I like about my favorite Mole tasks are the ones that sort of have twists in them that can emerge in the middle or the end of a task. Like, I'll give one example. So 5 players were brought around a dice table, and basically each person kind of had a card that said, okay, if the dice is 1, 2, or 3, you have to do this fairly simple task. 4, 5, or 6, you have to do this pretty uncomfortable task. So like 1, 2, or 3, you have to paint someone in the nude. 4, 5, or 6, you have to be painted in the nude, for example. And so, you know, if you
very racy for the Mole.
A little racy, yeah. I mean, they were right out of the gate. I mean, it was ABC. It was prime time. You got to bring in the 18 to 40-year-olds somehow. But so if you roll the dice, depending on what task you got, if you completed your task, money was put into the pot. If you didn't, it wasn't put into the pot. But the final person had a choice where they said, okay, if you roll the dice 4 more times and complete all these other tasks as well, you earn this much money for the pot and an exemption as well. So that was a really fun one. There was another one where they went to a university and 3 people participated, did a series of brain teasers. And for each one they did, there were $15,000 added to the pot. And then another group was brought in, and for every brain teaser that they did, the exact same set of brain teasers. And for everyone that they solved, $50,000 was taken out of the pot, which was really fun. And what happened was Anderson brought the first group into a room and said, okay, this is what's going on. You can race back to stop them, but you're going to have to figure out how to get, they had gone through like the University of Seville, which is like this labyrinth like college, and so they had to like run through the halls trying to figure out how to get there. So my favorite tasks personally are the ones where you think it's pretty simple on the outset, but then they're much like the genius that turns out to be like a hidden trap or a hidden trick that sort of complicates the game a little bit.
The company that produced the Mole, Stone Stanley Entertainment, they've done some other reality stuff, but nothing that has really resonated. They were the people who did Legends of the Hidden Temple. Mike, did you watch that one?
Oh, I mean, that resonates huge with me as a kid of the 90s. That's all I think about when I see any sort of, you know, Mayan-like architecture.
They also produced the legendary game show Shop Till You Drop.
Oh, but not to be confused with Supermarket Sweep.
Right. They also did The Man Show. And they also did the Joe Schmo Show.
That makes sense to the Man Show, because on the season one DVD, there's like previews for upcoming shows, and there was a lengthened segment that depicted the Man Show DVDs. I was like, oh, is there like a mole segment on this? But no, it was just an extended infomercial about the Man Show.
So they have not tested the waters again with a new reality show since then.
No, but the Joe Schmo Show did come back first. That's featured, you know, former Celebrity Apprentice contestant Lorenzo Lamas.
And Dan Liu
and Kristen Wiig. So, I mean, Joe Schmo's show was a fun one as well. Maybe on the 20th anniversary of that show, we'll go back and talk about it. But yeah, they did not have a fantastic, they're not, you know, they're not Burnett's company in terms of hits made.
Now, did you feel like in going back and rewatching all of season one, did you feel like that the players had a fair shot to be able to discover who the mole was? Like, did you feel like Catherine the Mole was doing enough that people could have potentially picked out what she was doing?
I would say so. Again, she was playing a much more underhanded game, and we can probably talk in a little bit about like what is the ideal best mole strategy in our opinion. There was one guy, so one of the contestants playing was a man named Charlie, who was a retired New York police detective, mm-hmm. who was the only one that suspected Catherine on the first day. It's really interesting. They cut to other clips of people being like, oh, Princess Catherine, or like, Catherine seems really genuine and nice. She can't be the mole. Charlie was the one to suspect her from the first day. And then what had happened was a coalition, or their term for an alliance, had formed between two other guys, Jim and Steven. And Steven, who was an undercover cop, had started to kind of bond with Charlie. They almost did what like the Brigade had done in terms of like, good, let's find one other person to connect to and get information from them. And so Steven had gotten Catherine's information from Charlie, and that coalition was able to use that to their advantage. So had Charlie not sort of caught on to her, I don't think anybody would have, because she did have some pretty big sabotages a few times during the game, but much more of the time she was sort of like, let's let the group sabotage themselves, which is definitely a viable strategy, especially in those first few stages of the game when everything is just so confusing and everyone's running around like chickens with their heads cut off.
Can I tell you that I had a pretty big mole crush on Catherine the Mole?
She looks like the child of if Jim Halpert got with Amy Adams as the bag woman in The Office. I feel like that's the child that they would have produced.
Yeah. Yeah, she was very pretty, the mole.
Yeah, she was. And she was, you know, I feel like there were like a few young, attractive women on the show, but they sort of disappeared in the first few episodes. And so, and you know, she's very poised. She was a law lecturer. She was going to get married. So she clearly had her life in check. She just seemed like a very confident woman, which is really interesting because in this sort of last episode slash reunion, we see her like she took being the mole very, very hardly. To the point of where like she was breaking down in front of the producers. She had actually passed out during a task. So it's interesting to see like
was
how much
she had taking a lot of abuse on social media.
Well, I don't. Oh God, imagine if social media had existed at that time, considering like, you know, the what people sometimes say towards female reality contestants in this in this atmosphere, like people would have gone crazy. Though they also would have said like, yes, Jim, work, get it. I think she just had a tough time dealing with this role of like making friends with people and then betraying them. And she was the first person to do this as well. At least when, you know, Bill came around in the second season, he had seen Catherine do it already. Mm-hmm. She was the first one that was kind of paving the way for this to happen. So she didn't feel very good about, you know, she'd become very close with Jim and Steven throughout to kind of lie to them the entire time and then kind of cut their throats as they went along was not a good feeling for her.
What has Catherine Price done with her mole notoriety?
That's a good question. I feel like she might have appeared on like a couple of shows throughout the history of reality TV, but I feel like she remained relatively under the radar afterwards. Well, she's sort of like,
interestingly, she went on to looks like that she became a producer on reality TV shows, that she was a segment producer, I guess, on the season one and two of The Bachelor.
Wow, I guess she was using her fame to its biggest extent then. And, you know, ABC crossover, I guess maybe the producers were like, well, Catherine, we kind of jerked you around there as the mole for 28 days. You want to come work on our other reality show?
Yeah, and she also went on to become a senior producer on The Will and The Starlet. Do you remember those shows?
I remember The Will. I don't remember The Starlet as
Starlet
much.
Was almost like the American Idol of actresses.
Oh, interesting. That's interesting. What were the challenges then? Like, do this scene?
Basically, following the dawn of American Idol, there was an American Idol of everything.
Yeah. basically, there was an inundation of singing reality shows that hit the American airwaves.
Yes. Well, not just singing, but it was like every single field, there was the American Idol of that field.
Talent competition. Yeah. Right. That makes sense. Well, I guess it looks like from IMDb, that was the last thing that she had done, though it looks like she has a screenplay coming up in 2016 called Fallen.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what that's about. A young girl finds herself in a reform school after therapy since she was blamed for the death of a young boy. So maybe this is about like Catherine's guilt from being on the mole is displaced onto the screenplay.
Yes, yes. Okay, so we will see you. Keep an eye on it for that. So what were the kinds of things that Catherine did back in season one of the mole to throw everybody off the scent?
So the first couple of episodes, she was pretty under the radar, as I mentioned in the past. Episode two, there was this really interesting task where Steven had been kidnapped, and basically everyone had to go find him. And there were, you know, there were people in vans, there were people in a helicopter, there were people in a boat. And Catherine was sort of this mentality of like, this is a comedy of error, so let me just benefit from the chaos that's going on to waste time and money. Though she did
chaos
call
Catherine.
Yeah, she was a little bit, but like she called Anderson and she's like, okay, is Steven in this place? And Anderson said no, and she was the only one on the phone with him to hear him say no. So she just denied it and said, like, okay, he said that this is where he is. So that was a little bit of subtlety. On episode five, there was a task where there was like a resourceful team, a smart team, and a stupid team, and they all had to get to the same location. And she was on the resourceful team with Steven, and they had to be led to the location by just a series of Polaroid photos. And what she had done is she had like, when there was a turnoff coming up that she knew she had to make, she distracted Steven by talking to him so that he missed the turnoff. And so that she thought he could be blamed for that at the end of the day. Probably one of the biggest ones is that there was this fortress test where there was a big glass bowl in the middle of this abandoned fortress. And the players had to guard it from these, what they call aggressors, which were these unarmed guys that would sneak in and try to knock over the bowl. And Catherine used this reverse psychology where she said like, okay, don't put me in the middle of the fortress. Don't put me guarding the bowl. And because people had started to suspect her as the mole, they said like, oh no, we're not going to do what you're saying. We're putting you in the center, which was perfect for her because when one of the aggressors came in, her gun, quote unquote, misfired and she missed the shot and the guy knocked over the bowl and the money was forfeited. So I would say that's probably one of her biggest sort of sabotage moments. Though what she did afterwards was she like broke down in histrionics to try to make up for it. And Kate, who was the requisite older woman, this like softened her up to Kate because Kate would think like use her motherly instincts and think like, oh, there's no way she's the mole if she's taking it this hard.
What did the mole get for being the mole?
I think the mole got like an amount of money at the end. It was not disclosed during the show, but I'm sure they got some sort of, you know, amount of money that was higher up than the requisite salary for being on the show.
Because the person who won the show got a nice chunk of change. What was it? It was over $500,000, right?
Yeah. First season was $510,000.
Wow. I mean, that's more than Big Brother.
Yeah, and that's a lot in 2001, let alone.
One of the things that I really liked about the mole was I felt like they got to eat really well.
Yeah, so they, I think in exchange probably of the mental torture that they've been putting these people through, they always made them stay in like 4- and 5-star hotels, and they always gave them lavish meals, and Anderson got to eat with them. That's another thing I love about the show as well, is like, say what you want about what you love about Jeff Probst or Phil. Like, I feel like they're always at sort of an arm's distance from the contestants a lot of the time. You know, everyone's in tribal council. Jeff's on the other side. Anderson's having dinner with them. He's sitting with them during tasks. I might have to make a bold claim here and say that Anderson Cooper might be my favorite reality TV show host ever.
Wow.
Just because I think he was the perfect mix of like, he was down and dirty and got involved with the contestants, but at the same time, he was very smarmy. Which I think any sort of like, you know, cracked wise ass remarks at them while they were trying to do the tasks, but I think was like the perfect combination of a host for my opinion.
I feel like Anderson Cooper's a lot more jacked now than he was during the time of the mole.
He was a little bit of a string bean back then. Yeah, maybe it's because, you know, he was a fledgling newscaster. So maybe he was only subsisting on a few hours of sleep and, you know, meals to go when he could. But now that he's gotten a big paycheck, I feel like his belly's a little more full.
Like, I feel like people talk about Anderson Cooper in sort of more hunky terms now than they did then when he was younger, 15 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Though I feel like his face hasn't changed in 15 years.
Okay, well, good for him. That's part of being a reality TV show host.
Yeah, that's very, it's the Botox, or so Jeff Probst has alluded to.
Yeah, Anderson Cooper also had a lot of leather jackets.
He did. You can really tell this is like early 2000s because they kept almost like Utopia, they cut to Aaron Anderson as a sort of omniscient narrator. Specifically at the beginning of every episode, he sort of gave these introductory remarks about what had happened. And you're right, he's always wearing some sort of leather jacket. I'm assuming he's in the Mojave Desert. They just filmed all of his spots there, but he's always like next to a rock and the camera just sort of like catches him unaware as he sort of gets up and talks to the camera. But yeah, you know, he's rocking the oversized leather jackets and a nice blue pair of jeans, which is a really nice insight. If people are born after the year 2000, they want insight as to how we dress back then. Look no further than Anderson Cooper in his interstitials during The Mole.
One of the fun things to go back and look at in these early reality TV shows is like they didn't really crack the formula on what the cast was supposed to be until later on down the road. So how many people were in this cast? Was it 10?
There were 10. And it's interesting because I feel like in this first season, they really focused on people that would be good at deduction and figuring things out. We had two police officers. You know, we had a couple of lawyers in there. We had a law student. We had a bartender, but he said he was good. He was a people person. So I feel like nearly everyone that was involved in the first season was probably cast less for their personalities and more for their ability to figure things out and solve things mentally. Whereas moving forward, even with season two, they were showing a much more of a diversity of careers with the players.
So they were trying to find people that would be good at trying to suss out the mole.
Yeah, exactly. Which, I mean, an undercover cop won. So I guess, you know, cops have a good showing here on reality TV. And the other undercover cop or the other cop finished in. It's always tough discerning, like, because Charlie was eliminated. There were three people left when he was eliminated, but he was technically in third place because Catherine was automatically taken out of the running to be the mole. So I guess I'm going to say third place, though technically it was fourth place. But yeah, both of them did really well.
Who were some of your favorite contestants from the first season of The Mole? The standouts for you?
So I got to talk again about Jim. Jim was the law
student. Jim Morrison.
Yes, Jim Morrison, not to be confused with that Jim Morrison. but he was the law student turned helicopter pilot. He was sort of like, I guess maybe one of the reasons why I liked him is because he reminded me a lot of Greg Buis, and that he was sort of a little off the, he was an intellectual, but he was sort of off the beaten path. You know, he had this sort of like set of fake teeth and he would do this character named Jim Bob sometimes. It was clear he was like, he was the goofball and was trying to make people laugh. Though again, he sort of had these weird confessionals at the beginning of every episode about like how much you want to trust a person and, you know, how much you want to self-sabotage the game. But he was a personality and I really enjoyed him. We talked a little bit about Catherine and Steven as well. Charlie, as I talked about before, I would compare him to like Roger Sexton. Definitely I'm more on the Roger Sexton spectrum mm-hmm. than the Rudy spectrum in terms of the grizzly old man, because he just seemed like not a lot of fun. Because he just seemed very like mopey. There was a point in time where everyone called their loved ones and he told his wife, like, I wish I hadn't gone on to this thing.
Yeah.
And he was like clearly just like he was tired and wanted to go home after a certain amount of time. And he actually fought with the other older person on the cast, which was Kate.
Yeah.
Who was this real estate woman who would also serve time in the Peace Corps. And Kate played a really interesting role because she was in that dice task that I mentioned before. She was the one that was sort of the hero and took the exemption by having everything done. But then in the next episode, she had to like go for an exemption again by trying to sabotage the game and you know, stop the group from getting money. And she tried that. And there were like so many times when suspicion was cast on Kate that when I was watching the show, I thought Kate, you know, little old lady in the corner might have actually been the mole, but I thought she was enjoyable. And then the other one that I really remember was Jennifer, who was this, I think, real estate woman but she was like a former snowboarder. So she was obviously very competitive, but she would like go aggro at these challenges to the point of where like after the challenge, she would like throw a Rocky from Fiji-esque fit and like throw things around and scream at people and get in arguments with people. So she was definitely one of the big antagonists on the cast. But it was interesting because she had this friendship with Jim as well, and that they were both gay. So there were a lot of like complexities involved with those top six, I would say. Mm-hmm.
I feel like I like Henry, the bartender, too.
Yeah, he was a good one, too. He was in seventh place. He had he was a bit contemptuous with Jennifer as well. There were a couple of challenges where like
he was feisty.
Where after like something went wrong, the two of them would automatically blame each other and get in a fight. But I mean, he's a bartender. He's jovial. He seemed like he had a lot of fun. The other three were like, I mean, you had Wendy, the designer. You had Manuel. And you had Afi, the law student. And those three were like a little unremarkable, unfortunately. But I feel like those seven were actually really good TV characters.
And then, so in season one, what were some of the biggest standout moments? What were some of the ultimate moments that were sort of just like tattooed in your brain from season one?
So the penultimate game, which they used in almost every season after that, is a game called Three Questions, where everyone took a survey, sort of like on Survivor, where you have to answer questions like, okay, a snake bites the other two, who would you save more? And these questions get uncomfortable to the point of where, like, one question was, who would be more likely to cheat on their spouse? And so what would happen is this one person would get sequestered away. Nanderson says, okay, Steven's in a room, Jim and Catherine, I'll ask you a question. If you think the answer is Jim, we'll go this way. If you think the answer is Catherine, we'll go this way. And it's such a simple game, but I feel like there are so many not only complexities involved to it, but just like the whole personality aspect of it as well is really interesting to me. And it's, you know, it's very indicative that they use that game in subsequent seasons, just because I think it's simple enough. And at that point in the game, everyone knows each other so well that there's a chance for sabotage there. And I loved the final test. Maybe it's because it basically was Escape the Room. And maybe it's because I'm a big fan of Escape the Room. But essentially, they were each locked in their own hotel room. But there were like clues in their rooms to other people's rooms. And so they had to communicate to make their way out of there. So near the end of the game, there were some of the bigger moments. I'll admit that the first couple episodes, it takes a little while for me to have gotten hooked, just because they're doing things like, let's jump out of an airplane, which were like probably more baseline reality TV tests when you look back on it than there were really big standout moments.
And then is there one point in the show that you feel like is the low point of The Mole season one?
I mean, it's tough because in episode two, you have this hostage game that I mentioned before, but you also have what I felt like was a really unfair game where there were people paired up in a cornfield maze. And basically what they had to do was they had to navigate the maze. But at the same time, there were two guys running through the maze trying to catch them. And of course, all the pairs failed, because when you have two people chasing someone, even if they're guided by someone else on the outside, there's a little to none chance that they're going to get captured. I also wasn't too big of a fan of these sort of aggressor games where it's like, okay, these people are chasing after you on the outside and you have a gun or they have a gun. In addition to the one that I mentioned before with the glass bowl, there was a challenge where like Kate was kidnapped and there were two, but everyone else had to come find her. But there were two snipers that were trailing them. And as a result, they almost got picked off immediately, just because when you're unarmed and you're running about and you have these marksmen coming by and picking you off, it's really, you know, anticlimactic. So I feel like those were probably some of the challenges that were more misses, in my opinion.
Now, going down the stretch, getting down to the last episode or two, do you feel like in the rewatch, is there any other possibility? Of course, you know that Catherine is the mole, but do you feel like is there any other possibility of that the other guys could be the mole?
Yeah, I mean, I think Steven had some pretty big moments.
Mole-like tendencies.
Yeah, it's a mole-like tendencies. He was sure there was some, you know, but it was a benign mole, but it was still a mole at that. You know, he was like, even in that final test, he's a police officer and he wasn't able to notice clues around the room. Like that could be a very indicative sign. I think Jim was probably the least biggest suspect out of the three. He had little moments where like there was a task where they had to get onto a carriage and the tickets to get onto the carriage were found in books. There was a moment where Jim had touched the right book and walked away saying, no, that's not the right book. And it turned out to be the right one. But I feel like Catherine and Steven had two of the bigger moments, or were two of the people that had more of the suspicion drawn to them. And it shows that apparently there was a poll conducted on ABC.com during the last episode. And Catherine had scored like 34% being the mole and Steven had scored like 37%. So I feel like the two of them had kind of run away with the suspicions at that point.
Mike, do you feel like the mole is something that, if they brought it back, would do better or worse in this climate?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question, because again, we sort of live in a culture
in the modern day. Now, I'm not talking about global warming.
No, definitely not, because that doesn't exist. where we exist in this culture where, like, I don't know if reality TV is necessarily associated with braininess anymore. You know, one of the things I loved about shows like this and The Genius is they're shows where you have to really turn your brain on to really figure out what's going on and who might be the mole and how could they sabotage these games. And I don't know, I feel like as much as we love these shows, sort of the base mood about reality TV is that it's sort of like, oh, fluff. It's stuff you turn your mind off of. I'm not sure in a society filled with, like, you know, Real Housewives and Jersey Shore knockoffs, how the mole would do. I don't think it would do well on a major network. I think it would probably be best if it was on a cable network, personally.
Yeah, I agree with that. If they could find the right network in the ABC Disney family of networks that they own. And I'm not talking about the ABC family, or they're calling it something new. What is this?
Freeform.
Yeah, Freeform. So I don't know if they have that right network, though.
Yeah, I love how our networks are named after jazz types now. Yeah, I agree. And they actually showed the mole on ABC Family sometimes. And I think that could be an interesting connection there. But again, like, you know, when cable networks even show reality TV shows, I feel like they're taking a risk there. I mean, let's look at, you know, Smartest Guy in the Room is a great show, but it's not exactly a history related show. You know, so mm-hmm. I feel like it's tough to find a network that really gels with the brand of the mole. Maybe history would be a good example of that. And that, like, if it's or maybe like Nat Geo has that brain game show, maybe they can bring the mole to that.
Mm-hmm. I think you probably, is it still owned by ABC Disney? Do you have to find the right one in that sort of like branch of ABC?
I would assume not, considering that if ABC decided not to bring the mole back, I'm assuming that Stone Street or whatever it's called decided, or that Stone Street sort of broke its relations with ABC. So maybe it's sort of a free agent, though. Again, I don't know what the last show they produced was, so maybe they're out of business for good.
Let's talk about some of the future seasons of The Mole, because it seemed like that they were super bullish on The Mole after season one, because they bring The Mole back in season two. They balloon the cast up to 14 people.
Yeah, there were a lot of people. And, you know, the episodes went up from 9 to, I think, 12 because of the additional cast. They added more twists. They added this idea called a neutralizer, where if somebody found it and somebody won an exemption in that round, you could neutralize the exemption so the person is no longer safe. And they actually added this twist called the bribe, where someone was given the chance to say, okay, for this amount of money, you can leave the game flat out. So they were definitely even trying more things from then on. And I mean, I love The Mole Season 2. I think The Mole Season 2 might want to be one of the best seasons of reality TV
Wow.
in general, just because there were so many characters. I feel like they really, it got more entertaining and more fun. I do feel like The Mole Season 1 has sort of a more serious aspect to it, where they're like kind of taking the game a little seriously. Whereas The Mole Season 2, they're having them dress up in goofy costumes and doing silly things. And Anderson's joking around more with the cast. So I absolutely loved it. Though, you know, I think the ratings unfortunately made the production team go back to the drawing board and say, what do we need? Celebrities and less players.
It got too fat. They tried to put too much in there. The height of The Mole Season 2 for me, and I feel like this will always be branded in my head, that they had this challenge that they had to go, and they locked people in this room, and they had to listen to Don Ho's Tiny Bubbles over and over and over again.
Yeah, so basically, I remember this test. What had happened is that, like, I think they got like dealt cards, and I think there were four people left. One person got to sleep in the hotel, but other people got trapped in what's called Anderson's Funhouse. There was one room that had like a snake in it. There was a room that had like cockroaches in it. And then there was one room that had like a bare bed frame and bubbles being pumped throughout, with the Don Ho's Tiny Bubbles being played. But like, it sometimes is backwards. It sometimes is forward. Sometimes it stutters. And I think there was actually a subsequent task in the episode where they had to go to the guy who wasn't in Anderson's Funhouse, and they had to, it's basically like two truths and a lie, where like, well, one person would tell the truthful experience about what happened, and the guy had to pick which one was the truthful experience and which were the two that were lies. And I think the guy, Al, who got the Tiny Bubbles one, told the truth, and they still didn't believe him.
I also vividly remember like Anderson Cooper, like in the room, like put his legs behind his head.
Yeah, it was.
You remember this? You recall this?
I do remember that. It was
it's
a
like
weird,
a very disturbing image for primetime ABC.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, again, Anderson Cooper was a lot looser with this. I remember in season two, there was a task where like they had to like, there was, for an extra amount of money, they had to like, well, two people that were drunk had to like pour two glasses of wine and transport them across the vineyard without spilling a drop. Neither one of them could do it. And Anderson's like, I was a sommelier, so I'll show you how to do it. But he was drunk enough that he spilled too. But those are moments that I like, where like the show can kind of poke fun at the host. But he definitely seemed a lot more loose and fancy free this season.
Now, the second season of The Mole, we mentioned that it was Bill. I have no recollection of the winner, Dorothy.
Yeah, Dorothy, she was definitely even more under the radar than someone like Catherine might be. It's interesting because I talked about The Bribe before, where a woman named Olavia, who a lot of people had thought was like their number one suspect, had gone, had left the game. Had she not done that, Dorothy actually would have come in last. And she definitely was playing, you know, she earned a couple of exemptions. Exemptions were also much more rampant in The Mole 2. It was sort of like the fast forward in early seasons of The Amazing Race, where like there was basically one per episode. And she definitely was playing a much quieter game, to the point of where, like, I remember when I was watching it at the time when it got to the final three, I'm like, well, Dorothy has to be the mole, because otherwise how could she have gotten this far if she wasn't? But it turns out that I guess she had enough skills and had suspected Bill at a certain point that she was good enough to win.
Yeah, now I'm looking at some of these pictures from The Mole season 2 and I see Al. I remember he was like the young guy and he had sort of like the soul patch, like the Jeff Schroeder 90s soul patch.
And I remember he was like freakishly tall as well.
Yeah. Now, he was like the young hot mole guy.
Yes, exactly. Well, I guess, I don't know, young and hot is, I feel like Bribs was the young hot mole.
Bribs.
Guy, which is one of the, I mean, in an era that had nicknames of people like Boo and Dreams, to, you know, Bribs might still top the list as one of the stupidest nicknames.
Let me see. What was his real name?
Michael.
Michael.
And maybe I'm just taking offense because who would want to disguise a name as beautiful as Michael, but Bribs just doesn't make sense to me.
Maybe this is the wrong caption. Bribs. Yeah, Bribs is the young hot guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think about what, I mean, there was Darwin, who was the lawyer, I remember, who kept screwing things up. Like, he kept getting penalties because, like, I think there was one task where they had to eat pizza that the group made, but they could eat only the pizza, and Darwin's like, nope, I'm going to get ice cream.
Yeah.
Or like there was a task, remember, where they had to hit the ball around and he hit the ball out of order and had taken money out of the pot. So Darwin was just kind of a big screw up.
Yeah. Found a great picture in my Google image search of Bribs with his arm around Survivor superfan legend Daryl.
Oh, interesting. A Bribs Daryl coalition.
That's good. And then I do remember who Dorothy was now that I looked at her picture.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm trying to think about other like memorable content. I mean, again, when it kind of gets ballooned out to a big cast, I remember there was, I think, a woman named Katie. And there was one of the first tasks in the second season was they had suspended everyone's bags over a pit of fire. And what they had to do was a group had to answer personal questions about everyone.
Yeah.
And had they gotten a certain number of questions wrong, the bags would have been burned. And I think Katie had a stuffed cow named like Moo Meadow or something. And they got enough questions wrong that the bags were burned, though it turns out they were fakes. But to have like Moo Meadow go up in flames, Katie was like besides herself.
Let's talk about Celebrity Mole, because I feel like that is a little more vivid in my mind than other than the Anderson Funhouse part
in
The Mole season 2. In a good way. I was very pumped up for Celebrity Mole. So the Celebrity Mole to me was like the first of the celebrity reality TV shows.
Yeah, before Celebrity Apprentice was Celebrity Mole. And Celebrity Mole sort of started skew in the direction of Celebrity Apprentice, where I've said in the past that Celebrity Apprentice is sort of like edited like a freak show where there's no real validity to it. It's just, you know, the most fun and entertainment you can get out of the show. And I feel like they were doing that. There really weren't really many serious aspects to Celebrity Mole. They were putting them through the most ridiculous things in both seasons. And they brought on the biggest entertainers, too.
Yes. The biggest names in entertainment. Of course, the cast of the original Celebrity Mole, which was from January 2003, really the height of reality TV. Right there, January, February 2003. That was when everything was happening at
exactly,
that point in time.
The peak of reality TV.
Yes. We had Corbin Burnson, of course, who would return for Celebrity Mole 2.
Yeah.
Eric Von Detten.
Mm-hmm. Yes. For a 90s kid like myself, we loved him from the Disney Channel movie Brink.
Yes. And Dinotopia.
Of course. Who could forget Dinotopia?
Frederik Vanderwall.
Yes.
Who would go on to be our mole, who I never really knew who she was. I thought she was Iman for a long time.
I think she was in Wild Wild West, apparently, because I think one of the clues was that they're like, oh, it's the Wild Wild West meets the mole. And apparently that was a clue that it was supposed to be Frederik, but I don't remember her from that movie.
Yeah, I don't think she's really done anything since the mole, right?
No, I mean, she's not producing screenplays like Catherine Price. She's not using her moliness to its fullest extent.
Kathy Griffin, of course, is the breakout star and winner of The Mole.
Yeah, she was just fantastic because she was completely unathletic. So there were some competitions where, like, I think she had to try to surf in one of the games, and she was just horrible at it. And she's Kathy Griffin, so she's always going to make these, you know, wisecrack, you know, sassy comments, and she did definitely delivered.
Tell me if I'm crazy. I feel like the Celebrity Mole was a huge turning point in Kathy Griffin's career. I felt like that Kathy Griffin was really, I mean, she talks about her life on the D list and stuff like that, but I feel like that she was much more of somebody who was just like not a major player. And then after Celebrity Mole, I think it really exposed her to a new audience. And I felt like her career from that point forward, I feel like went to a new level.
Yeah, well, so the only thing she had been known for before Celebrity Mole was Suddenly Susan, right? And so I think that after this, they at least gave her a little bit of a bump, because I'm looking up, I think My Life on the D-List started in 2005, which was a couple years after this show ended. So yeah, maybe that this was the spark that, you know, the Griffin vehicle
needed so
in order to get ignited. Yeah,
she was so funny. I loved it when she would make fun of the kid from Dinotopia.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And she seemed so annoyed with Stephen Baldwin.
Yeah, that's the funny thing, too, is that, like, again, on reality TV in general, we want these people that sort of don't have a filter to the cameras that will deliver their rawest feelings. And Kathy Griffin definitely did not spare a word when she was talking about how much she loathed some of those other contestants.
Yeah, like Kathy Griffin, Celebrity Mole is one of the all time greatest reality TV characters ever.
Absolutely. Celebrity Mole has produced fantastic winners, in my opinion, between her and Dennis Rodman. It's just... I just love this fact that we can look back on the world now and the 2000s in human history and say Kathy Griffin and Dennis Rodman are both celebrity brain game show winners.
Yeah. You had Kim Coles, who was the first person out. You had Michael Boatman from Arliss and Spin City. Has he done anything lately?
I think he's made a couple of appearances in other places, but the main thing I remember from Michael
Boatman, nice guy.
Yeah, the main thing I remember from him is, again, I was probably, you know, a little too young for the Arliss crowd, but Corbin's big quirk was that he got very paranoid about mole clues, because we didn't talk about this before, but in the first couple seasons, what had happened is that production had thrown in a couple of clues throughout the season to show both the viewers at home and you know, the players hints as to who the mole might be, and this ranges from, you know, in the Mole One, Anderson, after Henry gets eliminated, says, like, Henry paid the price, and her last name was Catherine Price, to the point where in season two, there was a series of matrix letters that came up in the credits, and if you pause it at a certain point, the letters that spell out Admiral would come up. Like, they got that meticulous with the clues, and Corbin Burston got, like, you know, Carrie from Homeland type of level in terms of, like, he was writing down every single detail in his journal. And I remember them, one of them being like, he saw a dollar sign somewhere and thought, like, oh, Arliss has a dollar sign in it. That must mean Michael Boatman is the mole. That's the one thing I remember from Michael Boatman.
And of course, then Corbin Burnson. Corbin Burnson and Steve Baldwin, really the patron saints of celebrity reality TV game shows.
Absolutely. Which means, you know, the patron saints made a return. Still a questionable decision, in my opinion, because that could have been two slots filled with other ridiculous celebrities. But yeah, I mean, they went out pretty early, right? I think they were like second and third eliminated.
It's really very funny because they both had this thing like, oh, I just want to win this game and I can't. I suck at this.
I mean, Stephen Baldwin was definitely still feeling, you know, the redheaded stepchild of the Baldwin family. So I think this was that was sort of externalized through his frustration at the Celebrity Mole game.
Yeah, a Francesca-esque run for both Stephen Baldwin and Corbin Burnson, who return and then are respectively the second and third players out of the season.
Yeah, stick to your day job, guys.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that there is a host change for the mole seasons that are with the celebrities. Ahmad Rashad was a much less interesting celebrity mole host.
I'm told Ahmad Rashad is a sportscaster. I'm
married to Felicia Rashad.
Oh, yes, of the Cosby Show fame, which is why we'll see Keisha Knight Pulliam in the second season.
Yes.
It's the Cosby connection, though I'm not sure anyone wants that connection nowadays.
Yes. And now, Keisha Knight Pulliam, she was on the Celebrity Apprentice, right?
Yes, and she, again, well, I love, you know, let's rewind ourselves back to a year ago when we were griping Keisha Knight Pulliam about not calling Bill Cosby to get support for her tacos. And
by future President Donald Trump also.
This is we are living in the darkest timeline.
Future
Rob.
President Donald Trump was like, why aren't you calling up Bill Cosby? He's a nice guy. Why aren't you calling Bill Cosby to get some money from him?
Oh, my God.
This was a year ago.
Oh my God. This is, it's absolutely ridiculous that, this actually happened in our, time.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. I have all of my Celebrity Apprentice sound clips from them. And that's really one day during the Trump presidency, we could go back and do a podcast about that. The ridiculousness of the Celebrity Apprentice.
Catherine Price should get some Kleenex.
Get some Kleenex.
And remember, it was only a year ago when Gilbert Gottfried said this.
Thank you, mein Führer.
Oh, boy.
All right. So then we also had in Celebrity Apprentice 2. So here was the cast from that season. So Baldwin and Burnson are back, the B&B boys.
Yes.
Mark Curry hanging with Mr. Cooper. He'd be a major player in Celebrity Mole 2.
Yeah, and he hung around until the final. I think he was the losing finalist.
Angie Everhart was there. She was the mole.
Yep, so this was the, everyone kind of got thrown off because they wouldn't think it'd be two supermodels in a row, but alas, it was.
They did it. They pulled the wool over our eyes. Tracy Gold was in there.
Yeah, they really were investing on the sitcom stars and Celebrity Mole, it seems like.
Yeah. Then you had Ananda Lewis. I have no recollection of Ananda Lewis.
Yeah, the only thing I remember from her is that she spelled her name wrong. That's, I'm like, your name is spelled wrong. Ananda is not a name.
She was some sort of a VJ. And then Keisha Knight Pulliam, and then Dennis Rodman.
Yes, which again, future Celebrity Apprentice players. Dennis Rodman, sign of great things to come with his time on Celebrity Apprentice.
I really did feel like the Celebrity Apprentice 2 was lacking without Kathy Griffin. I felt like Kathy Griffin really put the Celebrity Mole 1 on her back.
Yeah, and I feel like Dennis Rodman, as much as we want to like champion him as a character, I don't know, he kind of brought a little legitimacy to the game. Like, he didn't take any notes about anything throughout, yet he won the competition handily, which is like, I don't know. Exactly. Imagine he was the mole and you had to explain all of his sabotage.
Yeah. He did seem probably like he was more coherent in his Celebrity Mole era than his Celebrity Apprentice stints.
This was his pre-alcoholic imbibing.
I'm not sure exactly what was going on, but maybe the Celebrity Mole winnings really took him down a dark path.
Yeah, he went off on a Fabio-esque route in terms of misusing his Celebrity Apprentice winnings.
All right, then, so talk about the fifth and final season of The Mole when it comes back during the 2007 writer's strike.
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure what prompted ABC to bring it back, but after a 4-year break, they finally decide to give it another chance. They decide to bring back Civilians Only. The thing about The Mole as well is that it's always international with the exception of Hawaii. They always go someplace else. Season 1 was primarily France and Spain with a little bit of time in Monaco. Season 2 was Switzerland and Italy. Season 3 was Hawaii. Season 4 was obviously Mexico. Season 5, they went down to Argentina and Chile. And they had a new group of people. I think it was 12 off the top of my head. I might be wrong about that.
Yeah, a little bit. Anthony Crispino.
I'm pretty sure it was 12 contestants. So they brought it back. I enjoyed it. It was probably, for me, not as entertaining as the first two seasons, season 2 specifically, but I still thought it was like a fine season of reality TV. It did not make me want to turn off my television throughout.
And so, yeah, during that writer's strike, this was when they tried to pull out all the stops. CBS did a winter season of Big Brother. That was the Till Death Do Us Part couple season of Big Brother. So there's a lot of weird stuff going on during the 2008 writer's strike.
Yeah. I would much rather watch The Mole season 5 over Big Brother 9 any day of the week.
Anything of note from The Mole season 5? I did not even watch The Mole season 5.
So it was interesting. I feel like this one had probably one of the more obvious moles.
Which included even a recap episode in between episodes 5. That's how bad the writer's strike was.
Yeah, they're pulling out the stops from like early Survivor seasons of The Amazing Race 6 that they had a recap episode to be like, here's what you missed. The mole was this guy named Craig who was, I don't want to body shame him, but he was an overweight, out of shape guy. And he was one of those, sort of like what I thought about Dorothy. When he kept getting further and further in the game, I'm thinking like, well, he's got to be the mole if he's like, you know, if he's somehow been able to survive in the game. Like, there was one point where he almost got medevaced from the game, Rob, because he almost passed out in the, you know, in the Andes Mountains. It was a little more obvious to me. So it was a little more of an anticlimactic ending. The winner was this high school teacher and this soccer coach named Mark, who seemed like he was sort of getting the hero edit. It did bring this fantastic character in the runner up, who was this OBGYN named Nicole, who from the get go was like the most whiny, sanctimonious person on the show, who I absolutely loved. And she kept getting in a fight with this guy named Paul, who was like this radio DJ. So I really loved the rivalry there. So there were some fun moments. Again, not as many noteworthy moments as the first two seasons, but still an enjoyable season. We also got rid of Ahmad Rashad. I'm assuming after Keisha Knight Pulliam left, and there were no more Cosby connections, he decided to part ways with the mole. And we got this guy named John Kelly, who I don't think has done anything noteworthy outside of the mole.
Yeah, how is he as a host?
He was just as boring. I think he had a little bit more personality than Ahmad Rashad. Maybe Ahmad Rashad was afraid because these were celebrities and they might have bigger egos, but he still wasn't as on the level as Anderson Cooper was.
I think you got to bring a little pizzazz to being the mole. Like, I feel like the Giles from Whodunit is the right tone for the mole.
Absolutely. I would love to have seen him as the mole host, actually.
Yeah. And that's what Whodunit was probably the closest kin to the mole that we've seen on American television.
Yeah, because, I mean, it basically has the same concept in terms of there is one person who is working with production and is sort of sabotaging the other players without them realizing it. On Whodunit, it's more of like they're on a track that one person gets killed every week, whereas the mole was a little more freeform in that you can choose to sabotage certain tasks, you can choose not to. But it was still like probably the closest corollary we'll ever have to the mole on network reality TV.
And I feel like there's probably a more realistic chance of that coming back on the next writer's strike than maybe another season of the mole.
Just because it's fresher in the mind of the viewers, I guess. You know, I feel like maybe this is like the stepping stones. Maybe if we get Whodunit brought back, we can get the mole brought back as a corollary to it.
Mike, you want to take some questions from our listeners about the 15-year anniversary of the mole?
Is it 10 questions about the identity of the mole podcast?
Yes. And if you're not right, then you will be executed.
Oh, boy.
Did you like that they called it executing the people?
I mean, it's very graphic, right? It's better than, you know, voted off or eliminated. I feel like it had a sense of urgency to it that this person would be killed. Again, you know, let's compare it to Whodunit when people actually thought that the contestants died on that show. Here, they're actually saying they're getting executed, but nobody's raising a fuss about it.
Yeah, nobody was actually executed. Not even the celebrities.
No, though I wish, you know, we could wish a couple of them were.
So John Johnson wants to know, what Survivor or Big Brother players would have been great on The Mole?
I feel like Dan Gheesling is like made for a show like The Mole, right?
Yeah, Dan Gheesling would do very well at The Mole. I feel like any of those people from like the Mount Rushmore or Big Brother, I feel like, you know, Derek Levasseur would also be a great Mole player. I feel like, you know, anybody who's a great Survivor player would probably be really good at The Mole.
Yeah, I feel like now Steven from season one actually played a very similar game to Derek, where he was like, they're both undercover cops, but he was like making friends with everybody. He was kind of playing behind the scenes, even though he's probably much more prevalent on camera. I mean, I feel like I mentioned her before, but I feel like Danny Boatwright would be a good, like, under the radar type of player. Like, I don't think anyone would suspect Danny Boatwright as a mole. Yeah, I think she'd be a great mole. And it's not just because she looks like a supermodel.
So she would be a very strong mole. Who else would be a good mole?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I feel like people like Cass and Tony would not be great moles, but they'd be great players. Like, Cass is a lawyer, I feel like, is made for this game to kind of scout people out and call people out on things. I don't know, Kelly Wentworth, sneaky, sneaky. She could be a good mole.
She'd be a good mole. I think Russell Hance would be a terrible mole. It would be like the one season where everybody knew who the mole was, like, from the first day.
Yeah, well, because Russell would do extra things. He'd be like, I stomped on your hat. That's $10,000 out of the pot.
Extra molia.
Yeah, Russell would announce that he's the mole. Be like, no, I am the mole.
I'm the greatest mole of all time.
Yeah, and then the season's just canceled.
All right. Let's do a question. This is from Dave Backer, who wants to know, would it even be worth bringing back the mole without Anderson Cooper?
I mean, he was definitely a key element of that franchise in the first couple seasons. That being said, as I mentioned before, I still enjoyed season 5. I feel like you do need to find that perfect host to kind of be the face of the franchise should it be brought back long term. But I would have no problem being brought back sans Anderson Cooper.
Yeah, why don't we talk about this? Let's spice up the mole. Let's, you know, obviously we had a season of the mole which aired in 2008. There was really almost no interest. We've seen celebrity mole. Mike, if me and you have a pitch meeting at ABC and we want to try to get them to bring back the mole in some way, shape, or form, what's our pitch? What's our way that we're going to spice it up?
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like the international concept is interesting, and I feel like there are challenges that they've done in the past with the language barrier. I would almost want to increase the travel aspect more. like make it almost like a Road Rules-esque type of thing where they're constantly on a road trip, but the entire time you have someone sabotaging you. And you know what? You could even spice up a little more by making it like a blood versus water type of thing. Bring people in pairs and have, you know, one person out of a pair could be the mole and they'd have to trick their family member, you know? Like there, I feel like throwing in little twists like that might be able to push it in the right direction, even though it might affect the true sanctity of the game. It might appeal to producers in the long run.
I don't know. The appeal of international travel doesn't necessarily, and pairs doing it doesn't necessarily do too much for the Amazing Race these days. Here's my pitch. Here's my pitch to go to ABC slash Shark Tank of why we should bring back the mole. Although this might be a better pitch for why to bring back whodunit. But to go in, we're going to go in and say, look, true crime detective work is hot these days. Mm. And this is the closest that we can come to sort of getting in on that making a murderer serial buzz. We will let the audience follow along this mystery. They'll have their own theories. Maybe we need to even be following this in real time where it's happening and playing out and the audience is participating in some way, shape, or form. But every week they're getting a new chapter in this mystery and they're playing along and they're all going to have their theories. And ultimately at the end, it's not like Serial. We're going to find out who was the mole the whole time.
I like that. I think there are some comparisons here. I mean, you could probably look at the mole Reddit Once Upon a Time and the Making a Murderer Reddit and look at them side by side. And there's probably similar tendencies there in terms of analyzing the most granular types of clues. I feel like it might be more of a campaign to bring back whodunit because whodunit really is more of a crime,
right,
like murder scenario. But I mean, the mole could be, you know, you could still include those aspects there of like, I mean, you could say to ABC, hey, you like Quantico, right? And one of them is a deceiver. Like that's like Quantico, but in real life with real people.
I think we got to play that up a little bit more so than the challenges. And it may be a better pitch for whodunit.
Yeah, though. I mean, again, if we can get, I feel like if we this might be like a writer bill. If we get whodunit in the door, we might be able to tack on the mole on there as well.
Let's do another couple of questions. How about from Tony Scott, who was a big proponent that we have to do this podcast. He wants to say, I think that the mole is underrated in terms of strategy. I'd love for you guys to talk about looking in hindsight. What is the best strategy to use? Should players subtly make themselves try to look like the mole, even costing them money in the pot to throw people off? Or is it smart to make alliances or coalitions and share answers and observations? Or is it better to go on and do it alone? What do you think, Mike?
So I feel like it's very ad hoc in that I feel like you can't go in there with a predetermined strategy because for all you know, you'll go in there with that strategy. Someone's going to point the finger at you on day one and say, you're the mole. So you have to be able to change things on the fly. Catherine, for example, she knew going into the final three that Jim and Steven had suspected her as the mole. So what she did in this final task with the three hotel rooms that I mentioned before was that she tried to win the game because she said, if I do that, I'll be the hero and that will throw suspicion off of me a little bit. So you really have to gauge what people are thinking of you. I mean, I think that if you do sabotage, you have to look at it in a way that like you won't be immediately culpable. If you're part of a group, that's always great. And you can be the one to like nudge things in the direction. Let's say things are on a timed mission and you want to take, if you take a few extra seconds to double check your answers, maybe that's something that can work in the long run. When you're put out on your own, that's always really difficult. But one thing that I think Catherine did a great job on was just really tying it back to emotion. Like if you feel really sorry and almost have a fake breakdown about it, people are going to be less onto you as the mole. Though again, that might have been the first season and nobody thought of how a mole would act. People were more trusting of Catherine because she reacted so emotionally to failing these tasks.
Mike, do you think that the mole will ever exist again in any format, in any medium?
Well, it's currently running in the Netherlands. It has been, I think, since like 2000.
Okay, in any U.S. medium.
God, I really want to remain optimistic here, Rob, because, I mean, it was 4 years before it got brought back, but, I mean, almost eight years have passed since we've seen the show. I'm going to have to be realistic and say no. I think whodunit was a way for them to for ABC to say, okay, let's bring back a similar format of this type of show and see if it catches on. Even though it caught fire with a lot of us in the RJP community, it did not catch fire with everyone else, apparently.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was sort of a telltale sign to them of like, maybe we shouldn't bring this back. Though the good news is that it does exist in other currently running international varieties. So if people want a fix of the mold, they have ways to access that.
See, I wonder in my pitch of sort of like following up on the Making a Murder serial thing, I wonder if like the mole isn't exactly that. And I wonder if whodunit is too campy, even though we love the campiness about whodunit. If you're trying to appeal to the people who are like the Stephen Avery truthers and the people who are following serial, I wonder if like sort of like a campy Giles sort of is a turnoff for those people.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like the temperament of the celebrity seasons and even season two is very different from season one. And they're probably closer towards that whodunit variety of like things are funnier, they're more entertaining, people are taking themselves less seriously. And I think one of the problems that we might have in pitching the mole is that it's a very brainy concept. And I feel like even something like whodunit had confused people to the point of where they thought that people were actually dying. And I think ABC is not really looking right now for a show that is complicated enough to confuse their viewers.
I do feel like there's something in that sort of true crime reality TV genre crossover.
Maybe it can be a show to air on Investigation Discovery.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see if we can, like, if we actually need people to have a actual crime have been committed to get somebody, like, to get people to be interested,
yeah,
which is kind of dark.
People out there, please do not commit crimes for the sake of bringing the mole back, because like, I feel like that's a loss on everyone's part.
I know. Like, could there be some sort of a real crime where we're tracking like two or three people that are investigating this actual crime? Not that we're trying to find an actual murderer. I don't know. But we will see. We'll see where it goes. Mike, thank you so much for doing the research on all of this and rewatching all of season one of The Mole. I'm sure it was more of a treat than a chore for you, but thank you nonetheless.
Absolutely. This was a great opportunity for me to revisit this series that I had sort of always held close to my heart, but sort of forgotten about the early seasons specifically. I mean, I encourage people to really check out these seasons if you haven't yet. It's or at least revisit them. They're really fun rewatches, especially in this off season. The Dutch version is apparently still airing and they have English subtitles. Maybe those of you that watch those versions in the comments can let those of us that haven't watched them know, like, what are the good seasons to watch? I'm always game for checking out some more Mole, but thanks for having me on, Rob, to talk about this show from 15 years ago.
Mike, what is the hashtag?
Well, I mean, we want to remind our viewers about the great time that was Anderson's Funhouse. And you reminded me of that moment with Anderson Cooper's legs behind his head. Could we go with something like Acrobat Anderson?
Was that a feat of acrobatics that he was doing there?
Acrobatics is a very loose, it's an umbrella term. So I'm going to lump it in with that.
Yes. Okay. Not Akimbo Anderson.
No, he definitely was not. I guess there were several angles going on. Maybe Angular Anderson, but that might be too long.
Yeah, all right. So Anderson Cooper. Ironically, where we had Mr. Cooper was on season four, but not the Cooper that we wanted.
Yeah, or someone, at least someone that was hanging with him was there.
Okay.
But he wasn't hanging with the Mr. Cooper.
Yeah. I wonder if my mole crush, Catherine Price, will ever listen to this.
If she will, she'll write a screenplay about that time she listened to a podcast about the mole and it dived into all of her bad feelings associated with the time of breaking her friend's hearts.
Yes. All right. Well, Mike Bloom, great job. You could follow Mike Bloom on Twitter at Mike Bloom type on Twitter. Of course, Mike, what's going on with the Top Chef podcast?
Yeah, so over on Reality TV, we're Hap-Ups. Antonio Mazzaro, Kurt Clark, Josh Wiggler, and myself are hosting weekly recaps of Top Chef, which has been a lot of fun. In addition, I appeared on the Reality TV We're Happy Hour in the past couple weeks to talk about the series retrospective, almost like what we did here on American Idol, which had its final season. And there's an Amazing Race podcast that should be coming up in your feed sometime soon. So enjoy that as well.
All right, Mike. Well, great work here again today. Looking forward to talking to you again soon. Maybe we'll do something else here in the Survivor off season. But thanks again for coming on. We always appreciate it. And of course, we've got so much more coming up this week on the podcast. Of course, in addition to our weekly pop culture roundup on News AF, we are also going to be catching up with Richard Hatch, who is on The Biggest Loser. Mike, have you followed The Biggest Loser with Hatch at all?
A little bit. I dropped off for a long time between seasons, so I try to catch it when I can. It's tough when you have these super stuffed, pun intended, 2 hours, because I feel like they just pad it with so much, but Richard and Aaron Willett, so far so good, right?
Yeah. And on top of that, we are also going to be covering some more Survivor Cambodia. We'll talk with Jeremy Collins this week as well.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. And plenty other good stuff along the way. Should have another, you know, four, five, maybe six podcasts over the week. And so make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robinsonwebsite.com/iTunes. Mike, thanks again. We will be talking to you guys again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.